the Brainstorming Basketball Podcast. Last time it was Harrison Liao and myself. Tonight it's myself and Yosef Nasser. Yosef, first of all, how are you?
I'm doing well, Buggets. How are you doing? Good to be back with you.
You know, right before we pressed record, I was asking you how you were feeling. This is the Brainstorming Basketball Pod, but your Eagles are playing this weekend. How are you feeling going into that matchup? And can we have a prediction, please?
So the Bucks are favored by 8.5. It's terrifying anytime you go into a playoff environment against Tom Brady, the GOAT. He is missing weapons. Chris Godwin tore his ACL. Antonio Brown left the team. I'll just say this, Buckets. We remember what happened the last time that the Eagles faced off against Tom Brady in the playoffs. That was the Super Bowl 52. The Eagles won. So we're gonna pick the upset here. We're gonna say that the underdog Eagles are going to go into Raymond James Stadium and upset the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 28-24.
I love it. I love it so much. And Tim Colbert, if you're listening to this as the local Bucs fan, screw you, Tim. Let's go Eagles this weekend. Yosef, you said something in that statement right there that I just absolutely loved. You said Antonio Brown left the team, which is the nicest way to put what happened in that situation. So just so we're clear, because I haven't really watched football, how are Tom Brady's weapons now that AB is gone? Does he have many weapons left?
We're looking, you know, Mike Evans just concluded this season his eighth, it's a record, eight straight 1,000 yard seasons to start a career. So he's still in the lineup. They've got Scotty Miller, who's been on the team for a few years. They've got Tyler Johnson. He's got Gronkowski, but it's really going to be the Mike Evans and Gronk show. So you worry about guys who can get separation early in the route, like, you know, Antonio Brown could, you know, maybe more tight window throws for Brady. It's still terrifying going against them. The Eagles have been a great story. Trading away Carson Wentz, who was obviously supposed to be the quarterback of the future. He led us to a terrific 2017 season before he got hurt, ultimately became a Super Bowl champion. And then after that, his career kind of, you know, fell apart. We traded him to the Colts for a conditional first rounder that we ended up getting. So this season was it was ugly to begin with, but the fact that we've been able to turn it around and we've got to play, you know, you want your young, if you've got a young team, you want them to get experience. It's not exactly a young team because our offensive line, we've got some great vets on the line, got some great vets on defense. But, you know, for a young quarterback like Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, it's exciting to see what they can do in this setup. I'm optimistic, but it's just you know that Brady can rip your heart out at any time. He did it last year against he won the Super Bowl last year. So it's always a concern going against him, but it's just I'm gonna live in the moment. I'm gonna enjoy the game, and you know, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, we've got three first round picks going on next year. Let's build this thing, Buckets. Let's build something sustainable.
I hope the Eagles win. I hope you guys build something sustainable, and I will be bandwagoning. Well, okay, I'm going to be bandwagoning Mitch Trubisky's Buffalo Bills and the Philadelphia Eagles. So I'm hoping for the best. Tonight was an exciting night in the NBA, Yosef. The Memphis Grizzlies defeated the Golden State Warriors. So my immediate thoughts after this game was that it's time that maybe it was already time for you. I'm not sure how you were thinking, but I wasn't ready to call Memphis a serious title contender. And the way that they've just, maybe I should have, maybe I shouldn't, I don't know. But 10 in a row, 20 of 24, and they just look so poised late in these games. Tonight they had an 18-point lead against Golden State. Golden State was going to rally all the way back, takes their own lead, with a vintage Golden State like third quarter. And then I was like, all right, the Warriors are going to get this W, and the Grizzlies still managed to fight back and win. What are your overall thoughts on the Grizzlies? Can we call them a serious title contender?
It's funny. We were talking about in the last podcast I did with you and Harry, you said there's a clear top three: Golden State, the Suns, and Utah. Utah. And you asked me, you put the question to me, who's number four between Dallas and Denver? And I told you guys, it's the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, they're playing the best right now. They've got a superstar in Ja Morant. Their depth is incredible. And in a season that's been kind of disrupted by, you know, the COVID absences and, you know, different lineups taking place, they've been one of the things you can count on night to night is that the Grizzlies are going to be out there. They're going to play hard. They've got terrific depth. Desmond Bane, breakout season, one of the best shooters in the league. Jaren Jackson rounding into form. Dylan Brooks is out of the lineup right now. So Zaire Williams, their first-round pick from Stanford, steps in, and he plays pretty well in the starting role. Kyle Anderson's one of the most underrated players in the league. He can short roll. He can run some backup point guard for you. They've got good backup point guards in Tyus Jones. De'Anthony Melton's a combo guard who comes off the bench and is very disruptive. I like their backup bigs, Brandon Clark, and, of course, Xavier Tillman defensively is very strong. They're just a complete roster, and it all starts with Ja Morant. To answer your question, I think I would favor still the Warriors and the Suns as the top two, but it's just like you have to take – like even Stephen A. went to Twitter and said it. It's like the Memphis Grizzlies – he apologized for sleeping on them. They're a contender, and you got to give them a puncher's chance. You worry a little bit about the relative inexperience they have compared to, you know, the Warriors and the Suns. But then again, who were the Suns last year?
Yeah.
You know, the Suns didn't have a whole heck of a lot of experience. They had Chris Paul, of course, but, you know, the extent of the playoff experience that those other guys had, there was none. It was just basically the bubble, you know, the bubble Suns. And then obviously Jay Crowder and Chris Paul, but, I like this team, and I'm happy for Memphis fans. You know, it wasn't that long ago where they were, you know, basically trading away Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, starting over, and they built their team the right way. We talk about win on the margins a lot on your podcasts, hitting those little moves, hitting those late first-round picks like a Desmond Bane, hitting those second-rounders like a Xavier Tillman, and then when you get the – Jaren Jackson, fourth overall, 2018. Ja Morant, second overall, 2019. It's a good story. It's a good team, and I think that they have a chance to be more than a good story. This team is a serious team.
Do you this kind of stuff does not matter in the grand scheme of things, but I'm just curious to hear your answer on this. Who do you think the Grizzlies' second best player is?
I think Jaren Jackson is their second most talented player. I think that Desmond Bane right now is their second best player. It's one of those things where it could be slow-mo's night, you know, one night, and he can be that guy.
And that's why
Brandon Clark came off the bench, or I think he started. He had like an 18 and 15 the other night. So it's one of those teams where it's like they get it done by committee, but I think night to night it's probably Desmond Bane, in my opinion. Didn't shoot well tonight, 3 for 14, but – you know, he's top five, I think, at 3-point shots made. He's the real deal on both ends.
That the fact that Bane had such an off night for his standards and for them to still be so dominant was the most surprising part of tonight for me. Now, obviously, Golden State was without Draymond Green, but, you know, I still think they had enough to win this game. And I wanted to know, what are your overall, like, what letter grade would you give Klay Thompson in the two games that you've seen?
Can I give him a curb, or do you want me to just be like comparing Klay to primetime Klay? Because this is like compared to primetime Klay, it's, you know, probably a C, but it's just awesome seeing him out there. And, you know, he's hitting shots and he's taking them with confidence. So I'd say a B. What about you?
I'm at a B as well. I think that the most important thing is that he looks athletic still. And that was my biggest concern, obviously, coming off two major injuries. But he looks like the same kind of athlete, which should mean that he'll be a good defender, if not a great defender still. And offensively, it's hard to get in a rhythm when you're playing those short 4 to 5 minute stints. It's like every time I turn around, Klay is back out of the game, which I get it as, you know, as being logical, I get it. But in terms of being a fan wanting to see the Warriors try to catch their stride, it sucks. And with, like, the most epic part of tonight's game for me was when It was like 5 minutes left in the game, and you just see both of the Splash Brothers walking to that scores table at the same time. And the fact that Memphis was able to see that and withstand that, it looked like two superheroes coming in to like save the day, and they weren't able to do it. Now, going forward, Yos, what are you expecting to see from Klay? Do you expect him to eventually maybe end up averaging maybe 20 a night like the old Klay, or how do you think his role is going to be going forward?
I think 15 to 18 points a night. So this team is pretty deep with guys who take shots. Wiggins, obviously, Jordan Poole off the bench took 11 shots tonight. Draymond didn't play tonight, which I think, you know, it might be a different story if we have Draymond in the game as opposed to JTA and Otto and Iguodala taking some of those minutes. But yeah, I think Klay Thompson, 15 to 18 points a game. But it's just more so than what his numbers are. It's what he has the ability to do. Can he pop off for those 30, 35 point games? And I think that, you know, the shot's still there. They can get him open. I think that he can be a guy who's a threat to do that. Maybe not every night, but, you know, they don't need him to do that every night because they've got pretty good depth. I mean, Gary Payton II has been a revelation. I mean, this guy's been on every team in the league. and the fact that he's a real force coming off of that bench, a presence defensively, you know, they threw him on Ja, you know, and really he pestered him. He's an annoying guy. Like, and offensively, he plays way bigger than this size. He's tremendous. So, I think that Klay, it's just great to see him on the basketball court. And it's like, honestly, like the combo of a torn ACL, torn Achilles, and then he's just back out there doing what he's doing. Like, I guess from that context, you have to give it an A, but it's just, you know, we're impatient, we're spoiled, we want to see primetime Warriors, but give it time. I think that we'll see them round into form come March, come April.
I hope so, Yos. Last night in the NBA, Cade Cunningham had a career-high 29 points and 8 assists. And the Rookie of the Year race, it seems like every night, every other night, gets a little bit more interesting. Obviously, your guy Franz Wagner has had an incredible year in Orlando. Josh Giddey in Oklahoma City, Evan Mobley in Cleveland, Scotty Barnes, and now Cade, who early on in the season, it looked like he might not even be involved in this race. But now I want to know where you have specifically Cade Cunningham in your Rookie of the Year race standings.
I moved Cade up to two. And the thing is that I was watching, like, he looked so good against Utah, man. Like, this is the vision that we saw coming out of Oklahoma State, really just the pull-up game, the passing, the defense forcing turnovers, the size, like, this was it. But it's then after I watched the Cade game against Utah, like, you know, I went back and looked at some Evan Mobley highlights, and this guy is just ridiculous. Evan Mobley is the best rookie in the league. Evan Mobley is my Rookie of the Year. He's transformed a team that's been a laughingstock since LeBron left into one of the best 4 or 5 teams in the East. And it's, you know, the more I think about it, I was telling you and Harry this yesterday, I think that Evan Mobley is the all-star on that team. If you can only get one, like, I know Jarrett's gotten a lot of love, and I think Jarrett's probably going to get the spot. Darius Garland's terrific, but I think, in my opinion, I'd put Evan Mobley there. I think Jarrett's going to get the spot, though. But Evan Mobley is my Rookie of the Year.
I'm with you on the Evan Mobley train. I do think that the margin is getting very, very close, especially between him and Scotty and Cade. I'm not as high on Giddey on the Rookie of the Year race. And, you know, the thing with Giddey is I feel like, obviously this is going to sound like jumping the gun a little bit, but I feel like he plays better when SGA is not around. He gets in more of a rhythm, and he does a little bit more offensively when SGA is not around, and he's able to run the show a little bit better. Long term, obviously it's early, do you think that SGA and Giddey can coexist in OKC?
I think so. I was watching them against the Wizards today, and, like, Giddey was doing a nice job, like, cutting to the basket. He's so big. He's 6'8". Like, when SGA had the ball, I saw, you know, him make one cut to get a layup. You know, Giddey hit – he was 2 for 6 from three. I think that three ball, it's a little bit awkward, but it's improving. I think that they're both guys that you want to collect good players. And I don't think that their fit is so bad that you have to move one of them. Like, you know, if you can and get something that makes sense for the team long term – by all means, but I think that they're two brilliant, you know, super intelligent basketball players, and they've got to figure out the big positions, like who you're going to have at the four, who's the five long term for this team. And they're in a good position to get a guy like that, whether it's a Jabari Smith or a Chet Holmgren or a Paolo Banchero. I think they're well positioned. You know, they're one of the worst teams in the league. You think that they'd be high up in that lottery mix. And I'm excited for the outlook of this Thunder team long term. And I think that Giddey was a real find for them.
So what you said about Oklahoma City there at the end, that, you know, they're a lottery team. The crazy thing is, and they are, I'm not disagreeing, they're 13-27. They are three games out of the 10th seed. And the 10th seed currently is Portland, who Damian Lillard might not play another game all season. Do you think if you were a GM of a team in that bottom of the West, would you rather tank or would you rather try to make that playoff push and maybe give your young guys a little bit of experience? Because all those teams are pretty young other than Portland at the bottom.
Are you talking about the Thunder specifically? I think the Pelicans, I was watching the Pelicans today against the Timberwolves, and you commented on their Brandon Ingram hitting the game winner. Like, I think the Timberwolves looked horrible tonight for the most part. And I've been kind of impressed with B.I. I know that he's not a popular guy on Brainstorming Basketball, but he's a bucket, man. Like, he can get to his spots. He's smooth. Herb Jones, we talk about rookies. He's been terrific. I think that Valanciunas, like, they kind of stole him. Obviously, the big headliner for that for the Grizzlies was Zaire Williams. They wanted to get up to 10 to take him. But, you know, Valanciunas is terrific. And Zion, you know, we have no idea if when he's going to come back. But I think the Pelicans should make a move. I think for the Thunder, stay the course, develop your young guys. I think the Pelicans and Sacramento are the two teams I could see climbing up into that Portland mix.
Speaking of Sacramento, on the topic of fitting in together, there's been a lot of speculation that the De'Aaron Fox trade is imminent. I don't know if we'll get that before the trade deadline or not, but from what you've seen of his fit with Halliburton, now that we have over a year sample size, how do you feel like they can coexist going forward, or can they coexist?
I think Halliburton can coexist with anybody. He's that special. He is really unbelievable. The way that he's developed his mid-range game, the way that he sees things 2-3 steps ahead, he's got – it's like he's got eyes in the back of his head, the way he can find people. He's a little bit slight, so he can be taken advantage defensively, but his instincts are terrific on that end. I think if you can get – the De'Aaron contract at this stage, you know, he's making a max salary and he's having his worst year in 2 or 3 years. If you can get off of that money and get something more long-term, but I think Halliburton, you know, he's one of those guys who's like Alonzo Ball on the Bulls. Like he can blend in seamlessly, regardless of what you want to do. And I don't know, it's just, you know, what can you even get for a De'Aaron Fox at this stage? He's starting to play a little bit better, but, you know, it's not the guy that we thought was, you know, a top 5-8 point guard, you know, a few years ago. I feel like he's regressed from that. The jump shot has regressed. I don't know. So, and long-term, where is that combination taking you, I guess? But, you know, I think Halliburton can fit with anybody to answer that question.
Yeah, I like that answer a lot. You know, Halliburton is, you described it very well, as a Lonzo Ball type of player, where it's just his instincts and his IQ make him able to just fit in on any team in the NBA.
And by the way, he's better than Lonzo. He's better than, like, he can put the ball on the floor and make things happen. He can get into his midi. He can hang in the air and like throw it reverse, to the opposite corner shooter. Like he's a better player than Lonzo. He's very good. Good for the Kings to get a guy like that at 12.
So last week when Harrison was on the podcast, we did a Western Conference tier breakdown. So tonight you and I are going to be doing the Eastern Conference version of the tier breakdown. Now, the East is obviously loaded with really, really good teams. This is going to be interesting, Yos. Let's get into tier one. Let's have you go first. Tier one, who are your tier one teams in the Eastern Conference?
That's so tough because none of these teams are standing out. Like, I don't even know if there is a tier one. Maybe, like, we leave tier one empty and we've got, like, five tier two teams. Is that off base?
You can do that.
The Bulls have to be in there. They're the most consistent team, for sure. The defending champ Milwaukee Bucks, although you catch them on any night. I don't know if it's just, them missing Brooke Lopez or – they're also missing Holiday, but it's just like when that team, if you can tell me that team is going to be at full strength, I've got to put them there. The Brooklyn Nets in Miami, that's probably tier one for men, or tier two, I guess, if I'm leaving tier one blank.
So all four of those teams, just to clarify, are in that tier one, tier two mix, correct?
Yes.
Okay, got you. So, yeah, I'm with you on all four of those, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna add Philadelphia to that mix in that same tier. And the reason is because Joel Embiid is the most physically dominant player, even more so than Giannis, I think, that I've ever seen since Shaq. Literally since Shaq. This guy is not only physically dominant, so many of the moves that he makes on a nightly basis are just jaw-dropping because of his incredible skill level. And the fact is that you guys have had, as has a lot of teams, but you guys specifically have had kind of a rough time getting your full lineup healthy and playing at the same time. Whether it was Tyrese Maxey for the last week or so, Embiid earlier in the season, what is your ideal Sixers starting five when everybody's available?
Tyrese, Seth, Tobias, Embiid, and then I guess it depends on what we need from that last spot. I mean, I know you're not a big Danny guy. I think that you think Danny's got a fork sticking out of his back. So, respect to that. I mean, I could see Thibel in that spot. I can see George Niang in that spot. How about Benjamin Simmons? Come back, Ben. I'm just kidding. I don't want him back. Like, you have to think that something's going to happen with the Simmons situation to where, they'll trade him for the player who would slide in there. But, I don't know. What do you think the ideal one thing that I read is that a difference between this Sixers team and last year's Sixers team is that, aside from Joel Embiid, like in terms of guys rebounding their position, like, the Sixers are pretty porous on rebounding and closing out defensive possessions. So, Danny Green, Matisse Thybulle, those guys aren't presences on the glass. Seth Curry is, obviously a 6'2 shooter, so he's not going to help out on that as much. Tyrese is pretty good for his position, but, so someone who can get in there and crash the glass and defend his position. But, we've got a superstar and a bunch of really good role players. So that's why I had the Sixers in tier two for me. But who do you think you would put in the Sixer, if assuming you'd go with those four, Tyrese, Seth, Tobias, and Joel, who do you think you would slide in as that fifth starter?
I think it would have to be Matisse Thybulle just because of the undersized guards that you have at the one and the two. I would think that Thybulle could come in and give you some physicality. The Danny Green thing, I don't know if it's over. Do you think it's not over for you with Danny Green? It's not completely hopeless.
I think the situation is what it is. It is what it's been for the past, year with Philly, in his past two finals runs. with the Lakers and the Raptors respectively. The guy shot like 30% in the playoffs. So, you know, I think this is the player who's been, but he's a smart player. He's still, you know, a good transition defender. He can hit an open shot. He knows how to play. He's a ball mover. And when we lost him in the Hawks series, you know, we lost the series basically. He's still a guy who's been out there. He's got that veteran know-how, and you know, he's I think he's useful for, you know, 15-20 minutes, you know, a game. But yeah, he's not prime Spurs Danny Green, who's breaking finals records, you know, for 3-point makes. He's in a different stage of his career, so you do have to stagger him with, you know, he got toasted by, you know, when Doc put him on Trey Young early in that Hawks season series, he got toasted. So he is what he is. He's got pretty good positional size. He can hit shots, but you know, I think that you have to kind of play that position by committee, and hopefully Ben Simmons gets traded so we can, you know, bring some more guys into that group to help fortify that three position for us.
First of all, I think you just talked me back into Danny Green. And second of all, let's get on to your tier two teams, because I'm assuming Philadelphia is in this tier for you.
Yes, absolutely. Philadelphia is in that tier, and Cleveland is in that tier, and I think that's the tier, to be honest.
Wow.
Just those two.
The reason why I say wow is because, well, we'll get into the other team that we're missing. I don't know if you know who I'm thinking about, but I'm surprised.
I think you're going to say the Celtics.
No, I'm not a fan of the Boston Celtics this year, but we'll get into that in a second. So, wow, okay. So
the Bockers. You're going to say the Bockers.
Absolutely not. The tier two teams for you are Philly and Cleveland. So I'm going to go with, you know what? I guess we'll just say it right now. Tier two for me, go ahead. You have your hand up.
You're going to say the Hawks. Love the Hawks.
Yeah. Cleveland, okay. And Atlanta, man. Atlanta, I want to put them in tier one, but they have been so pathetic. They've been so pathetic. I'm not going to deny it. They have been pathetic. But the fact of the matter is, Trae Young is just as good as any point guard. He is incredible. And, you know, things have not gone their way with COVID and with injuries. I mean, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, Trae Young, John Collins, Clint Capella, they missed everybody for a stretch there. Bogdanovich, the Lakers game the other night was the first time that I can remember they had their five actually healthy. And that's not even, you know what, that's not even including DeAndre Hunter. So I shouldn't even say their full five. But, you know, first time they had Trae, Reddish, Bogdanovich, Collins, and Capella. And talent-wise, roster-wise, this team, I think, is as talented as anybody in the East. Now, with that being said, they've been terrible, especially defensively this season. They've been terrible. So putting them in Tier 2 might be a little bit generous. But, you know, they have more talent, I think, than Cleveland. Healthy talent, I should say. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like they haven't been able to figure it out this year. I'm curious if you have them in your Tier 3.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm flirting with doing something with my Tier 3, but I want to hear your Tier 3 first. Let's hear who you've got in your Tier 3.
So Tier 3 is going to be – so we're at, I believe, I have seven teams already put in the first two tiers. So you know what? Yeah, this tier for me is going to be Charlotte, and it's going to be Toronto, and that's it. I can't reward the Celtics or the Knicks or the Wizards. They are so painful to watch on a nightly basis, all three of them. I can't stand watching any of those three teams. But what do you have for that tier?
I think it's probably just Atlanta by themselves, and that's why I wanted to see who you'd put. The only other team I would consider there is Charlotte. I watched them play the Bucks the other day, and, you know, they've got guys who can get going. I mean, Terry Rozier is a spark plug. LaMelo is a genius. He's special. You know, Miles Bridges is a dog. Kelly Oubre has been out, you know, for a little bit. They've got one center, though. You know, Mason Plumlee, I guess PJ, you know, can play some small ball five for them. Cody Martin's turned himself into a very good player, a former second-round pick. You know, he's shooting the lights out. You know, this is a guy who's been a sub-30% shooter for majority of his career, and now he's, like, you know, shooting. He can put the ball on the floor, make extra passes. He can defend a bunch of different positions. I like the team, but it's just like it feels weird putting a team that made the West, or the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and you can say, oh, it's just because Ben Simmons had a meltdown. They still made the Eastern Conference Finals versus the Hornets, who haven't really done anything. The last time, I mean, last year they got blitzed by the Indiana Pacers by like 40, 50 points, so in the play-in game. So, I think it's Hawks in Tier 3 for me, and then that Tier 4 is going to be your Hornets, Wizards, Celtics, Knicks, Raptors. I'll put all five of them in the tier.
Wow. So there's a lot to cover there, but I'm really thoroughly disappointed that you put the Celtics, Knicks, and Wizards. I mean, I get it. It's just that entertainment-wise, are those not the three least entertaining teams aesthetically? Or am I forgetting anybody? Because you know, you talked about the Wizards game tonight. They are so, I don't even know the right word for it. They are just so up and down. It's like, aesthetically, watching Spencer Dinwiddie play point guard. I had, you know, we talked about this in the group chat, high hopes for Spencer Dinwiddie coming into the season.
Yeah.
But there has been just no signs of him being able to put it together as a starting point guard. And then there's so many examples of that on the Celtics and the Knicks. They have so many players that have that kind of feel to them.
How about RJ Barrett though? He's been on a mini tear. I think Julius has been slumping all season, but RJ Barrett, you've got to tip your cap off to him. I mean, you said it yourself with the Celtics. I mean, those two players, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you have to take them seriously to some degree. The Wizards, like, I like watching Kuz. I like watching Corey Kispert line up wide open shots and miss them. He attacked a closeout and had a nice finish in traffic today. What am I saying? You're absolutely right. The only team – pre-Lance Pacers, I think the Trailblazers, the Timberwolves I watched tonight, like, I know Anthony Edwards, you know, was explosive late, but that team was all sorts of sloppy. You might have thought they were out on Bourbon Street the night before or something, because I don't know what the heck was wrong with them. But, yeah, like, in terms of entertainment value, the Wizards are way down there for sure. But it's like, you know, like I said, I put the Hawks in my Tier 3, and I put that big cluster of teams in Tier 4. And then Tier 5 is probably the Pacers by themselves. Tier 6 is the Magic and the Pistons.
Yeah, that's how I would have it as well. Now, speaking of the bottom of the Eastern Conference there, what do you think of the Pistons going forward? Because I'm really curious. Obviously, Cade Cunningham and Sadiq Bey, but, you know, a lot of people have given Troy Weaver a lot of praise over, at least that's what I've seen on Twitter over the past week or so. And I loved the Bol Bol trade. The thing is, I have a hard time thinking that the Pistons have anybody that can really stay on that roster besides Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey, Grant and Olynyk, and maybe a guy like Hamidou Diallo. I don't think Beef Stew has panned out. I don't think he's gotten that much better. Killian has been a mess. What are your thoughts on the Pistons?
I mean, I think that the only guy you're excited about moving forward is Cade Cunningham. It's the worst shooting roster in the league. Isaiah Stewart is a backup center at best. Sadiq Bey, his shot has betrayed him this season after being a very good shooter last year. You know, he's a good rebounder. He's got good size, but it's like, you know, is he like a fourth or fifth starter on a good team? You know, Hamidou Diallo is a nice athlete on most teams who would come off of the bench. You know, sure, he's a keeper. You know, I think that you bottom out and hope for some lottery luck and get another guy to pair with Cade, you know, to help him get some spacing. I mean, Jabari Smith is a fantastic shooter. He's at Auburn right now. Chet Holmgren, skinny. I know you're not as big on him, but you know, defensively, his impact is very pronounced, and we'll see if he puts on the size to where he can have more of an offensive impact. You know, Paolo Banchero is a complete bucket getter, and then maybe Jaden Ivey is a guy if they don't, you know, right now, if the lottery were today, they'd be the second worst team, you know, so they'd have the number two pick or whatever before the lottery happened. Let's say they were to fall out of the lottery or they were to drop their position. You know, I think a Jaden Ivey would be a guy, or Johnny Davis from Wisconsin is a guy who's been really on a tear as well. You know, just a bucket getter. So, you know, this is a team that it looks like they made a mistake passing on Mobley for Cade. And there were rumblings leading up to the draft that they were considering Mobley. They had him in for a workout. Mobley seems like this generation's potentially Tim Duncan type of prospect, just a transformational type of prospect. Cade is a very good prospect, but falls short of that in terms of being able to change the dynamics of your team on both ends. And we'll see. You know, we'll still give him time. I think he could tighten it. He could stand to tighten his handle. He's not in a good situation in terms of the spacing that he has because of guys like Beef Stew and, I mean, every guy I named. Like, nobody could just shoot on that team except Kelly Olynyk and Cade. So, yeah, it's not pretty. You know, they only have one first-round pick this year. I think that Jeremy Grant, the last I heard, he's a guy who can command a first or two first later in the first round. So, you know, I think you've got to cash in on that. And, you know, aside from that, Bray, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bleak. The thing is that what you said, obviously, they're going to have a top pick to pair with Cade Cunningham. And you also have the thing that I think that they got really unlucky with was that Kelly Olynyk, I don't know if they plan to keep him long term, but he was playing very good basketball for them and would have got them a very nice asset at the trade deadline. But I don't think that that's possible since he's been hurt. And then a guy like Jeremy Grant had more value coming into this season than he has now. His value has regressed. So it's bleak. To backtrack a little bit, the Memphis Grizzlies obviously have won 10 in a row. Before they beat the Warriors, they had a game against the LA Lakers who had won 4 in a row coming into that game. The Lakers, in my opinion, have looked, besides that Memphis game, better. Not great, but better. LeBron's been incredible, and things are a little bit on the up and up, I would say. They're 21-20. The West is obviously, the middle of the West is wide open. What are your thoughts on the Lakers overall? Do you think that they have improved? Do you think that it was too small of a sample size? What are your thoughts on the Lakers?
I think you said it. LeBron has been incredible, and the move to center, it's just he's bigger, he's smarter than basically everybody, you know, who he's going against. There's no one who, in the Western Conference, I don't think, who can punish you if you're the Lakers for playing LeBron at the five. And he's just, you know, he's 6'9", and he's a tank. And, you know, that opens up the full floor because you can surround him with more shooting. I think Malik Monk has been, I'm not going to say like a revelation, but he rightfully took advantage of the opportunity that was given to him, signing with the Lakers on a minimum contract, former lottery pick, 11th overall in 2017, had fallen out of favor in Charlotte, didn't get re-signed there. His shooting, you know, he never lived up to his bill as a shooter in Charlotte. For the Lakers, he's done that. He's been an absolute sniper for them. I think they've somehow coaxed out a miracle, like, competent season out of Avery Bradley. That guy looked done for stretches last year in Houston. You know, the Russell Westbrook thing is always going to be the elephant in the room. And I think you sent the clip of him in the press conference. You know, they asked him about Ja Morant, and, you know, they asked him, you know, being a point guard, what do you think? And he laughed, basically. He laughed at the fact that he's a point guard because he's not a point guard on this roster. LeBron is the point center, everything on this team. And everybody has to kind of fit in around that. They're going to get Anthony Davis back at some point. I don't think he was having a particularly strong season by his standards. His shot has fallen off a cliff. He's going to have to be better. And I don't know, somehow approach that guy. If LeBron and Davis can get to the point where they were in the bubble, like where they were locked in on both ends, I guess anything's possible with the way that LeBron's playing, but all it takes is one tweak here, one injury, one locker room blow up, whatever. And, you know, we're back where we started, but I will say that you're right. they were in a position where they were like, if the playoffs started today, they'd be in the play-in, but it's like they were a lot lower in the standings, like, you know, 9-10 range. They're seventh right now. And, you know, I think that they've got an opportunity to climb up a little bit more.
Do you think that Russell Westbrook will finish this season in a Lakers uniform?
It's so tough to say, because you've got the, like, he's been traded everywhere possible that he could be traded. Like, you know, traded to Houston back when we were at Medill, traded to Washington for the other horrible contract, traded to the Lakers, the only team desperate enough to take on a contract like that. So it's like, I don't even know what case you can make. I floated this out to you guys in our Twitter thread or whatever. The only team I can think of is sending him to the Knicks if they wanted to get off of that Fournier, Alec Burks. They can't – Derrick Rose can't be included in a trade like that because of something related to his contract, the way that it's structured with the raises. They can't trade Derrick Rose, who would be a good fit with the Lakers, but that wouldn't happen. But you can aggregate salaries on the Knicks, get off of some of that longer-term money, and basically have Westbrook this year and then expiring next year if you're the Knicks, and really hammer the free agency of 2024? No, 2023, the summer of 2023. Hammer that free agency and try to get someone to join RJ and Julius.
Here's the thing, Yos. As a fan of the NBA, I would love to see Russell Westbrook.
Me too. No, I think the Garden would whatever he's got left in the tank as a high-usage player, I think the Garden would absolutely bring it out of him for a miraculous 2 or 3 months. It's kind of like what happened with the Wizards when he went on that tear. What are you laughing at?
I thought you were going to say 2 or 3 games. I was about to say, okay, so as a fan of the NBA, I would love it. But as a fan of player safety, I would hate it because the Knicks fans in Madison Square Garden would be throwing shit at the players on the court. They would be so angry. They are booing Julius Randle off of the court, basically, after that whole fiasco this past week. Imagine if it was Russell Westbrook. First of all, the craziest thing about the Westbrook thing is that his mid-range shot used to be, I didn't think it was great shot selection, but it used to go in. Now
it used to be a weapon against drop coverages, and now it's just a complete disaster.
Once a game, he hits the top of the basket. It's like, looks like some of, never mind. It looks like something you would see at your local pickup run. It's ridiculous.
It looks like Tommy Colbert out there sometimes, man. It's bad.
It's crazy, but, you know, him going to the Knicks from an entertainment standpoint would be very entertaining. So if you're not a Knicks
fan, I'm rooting for it, Buckets. I'll tell you, I was, you know, been watching the NBA a long time. Like, I remember the Knicks teams, Starbury and Stevie Franchise, and, you know, those teams won 20 games and, you know, big names and few wins. And I think it'd be perfectly fitting for Russell Westbrook to be a Knick, to honor and carry on that legacy.
I would love to see it, Yos. I would love
Eddie
it.
Eddie Curry and Zach Randolph. Do you remember that front court? Yeah,
yes, I do. Was Jamal Crawford on that team?
Jamal Crawford was on that team, wow. Absolutely. Jalen Rose had a cup of coffee with that team.
God, that we could remake that team very easily this season. That team can be remade in a heartbeat. Now, with the Knicks, do you think that they will finish in the top 10 in the East? They're in 11. They're in a tie for 10th right now with the Celtics.
Flip a freaking coin, man. I don't know. Sure. I mean, like, Fred VanVleet's been on one. You know, he's kind of solidified an all-star spot for himself. I guess the Wizards would have to be the team that falls out. I mean, flip a coin, man. I have no idea. Like, because they're right. Like I said, I mean, when we went through that tier breakdown, I had that tier 4 of 5, and they're in that group. And you can tell me it's going to break out any other way or any way, and I wouldn't be surprised. So the Knicks, sure, I'll have the Wizards out, and I'll have the Knicks in, but I don't feel good about it.
Western Conference. This is my last question for you for the pod. Western Conference wise, if you had to predict we're halfway through the season right now, who do you still have at Golden State and Phoenix in the Western Conference Finals, or do you have something different?
Right now, the 1-4 matchup, assuming both of those seeds were to advance, would be Memphis and Phoenix. And I think that Memphis and Phoenix have split their season series this year. That'd be a pretty interesting one. Wow.
Where would
I think I've got Phoenix and Golden State. Got Phoenix and Golden State.
I was going to say, where would Phoenix put Chris Paul defensively against the Grizzlies?
On Ja.
Wow. That would be interesting. I wouldn't put it past
him. You think they'd put McHale on him?
I think so. But then where do you put CP3? That would be my question.
Bane, Brooks.
These guys
are obviously bigger.
I think physically CP3, that would be a great series, like you said. That would be an amazing, incredible series. I'm with you, though. I think Phoenix Golden State is still the pick, but Memphis is right there. And then tonight we had the news that came out that the Nuggets are expecting to get Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. back before the end.
What?
That news came out tonight. I don't know if it's a reputable source, but because there was reports that MPJ was definitely done for the year. So, and then Kawhi as well and Anthony Davis. The West is going to be probably twisting and turning 15 more times before the end of the season. But for sure, Golden State and Phoenix are the top two. Yost, you got anything else for us before we get out of here?
Well, we went through the Eastern tiers. I mean, the big elephant in the room is that you told Casey Johnson 2 years ago, 3 years ago, coming up on 3 years, that the Bulls would be the 4 seed. Now, these were the Kobe White, Zach LaVine, Wendell Carter, Lauri Markkanen Bulls, the 2019-20 Bulls that finished 10th in the East. Your Bulls have a puncher's chance at making the finals, like after all of the turmoil they've put you through. I don't know if you're holding back your excitement. I don't know if you've lost your excitement because it's not the team that you grew up on. Casey Johnson loves this team. Adam Amin loves this team. Stacey King loves this team. The city of Chicago loves this team. Can this team make a run? And what's the matchup? Actually, let's do this, Buckets. We know that the playoffs are about matchups, right? So I'm gonna go through the top contenders, and I'm gonna ask you with your Bulls how you would feel about. I want you to give me a series prediction. Each of these teams, we're gonna run it by what we've seen today, what we can expect for these teams. Bulls against the Nets. What would be your pick? You've been down on the Nets.
I think we would beat the Nets. I really think we would beat the Nets in a best of seven.
How many games? Five, six.
Six. I think.
And why do you feel so confident against the Nets?
First of all, I think Vooch would eat in that series. And I think that our wing defenders would be an ideal matchup against their scores. And then Kyrie obviously wouldn't be able to play at home. And I just like the energy on our team compared to the energy on the Nets. The Nets are a very lackadaisical, lethargic team. Now, they're definitely that classic, we want to flip the switch team. The thing is, we've seen that, you know, in our lifetimes watching the NBA, we've seen that go both ways. We've seen teams play that card and they flip a switch and then it's game on and it's incredible. We've also seen the other side of it where teams are like, we're going to flip a switch, we're going to flip a switch. And then when they go to flip the switch doesn't turn on. I think the Nets of this season are probably more in that second category where they're going to try to flip a switch at some point, and I don't think it's going to turn on. Whereas a team like the Bulls has had that switch turned on from day one. And I think that matters.
I love it. And to echo that point, the Bulls 2-0 against the, you know, obviously we can throw regular season records in the trash when it comes to the playoffs, but it's promising that the Bulls are 2-0 against the Nets this season. So you say Bulls and six.
Yes, and they play tomorrow night on ESPN. So that will be – but the thing is Harden and Kyrie are both questionable. So we'll see what happens. But that would be an impressive statement win by the Bulls. If they can – on ESPN, the Bulls teams that you know, we talk about from the olden days, the Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose Bulls, they made you fall in love when they were on ESPN, when they were on TNT. this Bulls team is just now starting to get that national buzz. This game was flexed into that ESPN slot. So this is the first opportunity that I can remember where they can, maybe not the first, but one of the first opportunities that they have to really make you fall in love with them on a national stage against the second best team in the East on paper right now. So what an opportunity for them.
And they feature a guy coming off that bench we didn't mention in that rookie discussion, Ayo Dosunmu, who is a top 12 rookie in this class. He's been absolutely terrific, and he's an absolute dog on defense. You saw it early, and happy for you about that. Speaking of dogs, let's go to Jimmy Buckets and the Miami Heat. Let's say they meet up with the Bulls in the second round of the playoffs. Who do you like?
This is the team that I really think scares me the most, to be honest. And for multiple reasons. The Bucks, who we haven't gotten to, but just to fast forward, we're going to have home games in Milwaukee. So that matters. I mean, the crowd, every time we will. I mean, you can laugh it off, but every time
– Oh, you're right.
The Bulls go to travel to Milwaukee, that crowd turns into United Center North, and I think that that matters a lot.
Now, Buckets, like, you know, this is a different Bucks team. This is a team that's won a championship now. So do you still have that same – like, this isn't the 2011 John Salmons teams, Andrew Bogut teams coming to Chicago or going to Milwaukee. This is the Giannis and Dennis Kumbo, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday teams. You still we'll check up on that, but you're still saying United Center North.
I think that the crowd will still be 50-50. Now the Bucks might beat us in five, but I think that they won't win the crowd battle in the series, and I think it'll be very noticeable to the national TV audience. The Heat, I really believe, probably have our number because Jimmy and DeMar, they can cancel out Zach. You know, we joke about it, but a guy like Hero, you combine Hero and Robinson's offense, I think you can kind of mitigate Zach's impact. And then it becomes the rest of the roster. And then you got Bam Adebayo, Kyle Lowry, Martin, who's been a revelation for them. Yurtseven might give them something. PJ Tucker, you talk about championship experience. And then the guy that has been the biggest surprise for Miami, I think, all season, Max Strus, who has been – again, a former Bull that we let go. He's been a revelation for them. And now that they start him, I think the fact that they start him and the fact that they pair Duncan and Tyler together, Duncan and Tyler and any three guys that you put on that bench unit, I think that's a 500 team in the NBA. Forget the rest of the Heat. But Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero off your bench, I mean, Kobe and Ayo, they are in for a tall...
And Alex.
That's true, and Caruso. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be a great series, though. I think any of them would be a great series.
So your prediction is Miami in seven?
Yes. Unfortunately, okay. Yes.
Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I think the Bucks would probably beat us in six.
Wow.
How would we guard Giannis? I don't see... We're going to put Javante Green there.
Derrick Jones Jr.
Yeah, that would be the matchup, and then you hope and pray. But you know, like you were talking about the Charlotte games, Giannis had 40 plus, and they couldn't win. So this Bucks team might be a little bit different than last year's, but I think it's too soon to tell. They've had so many different injuries that it's not fair to properly gauge how good they are yet.
And finally, my Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, you guys have had our numbers multiple times this season, and Embiid would average 40 against us in a playoff series. And, you know, I really think that that series would probably go seven games, and I think that it would come down to the fourth quarter of game seven. I think that it's a lot more even than the records. I mean, we're 4.5 in front in the standings, but again, we've been a team that's obviously taking the regular season more seriously than a lot of other teams in the Eastern Conference. And those kind of teams, it scares me a little bit because it's obvious that the Bulls, it matters to them to get the one seed. I think that that's been evident. Whereas you see a team like the Brooklyn Nets last night, they're on the road in Portland, and you got the fourth quarter, and they're throwing out De'Ron Sharp and Cam Thomas, two rookies. So obviously, it's not that important to the Nets, you know. Then in the playoffs, obviously, it's important to everybody. So the Sixers are in that category where it's like, it's the regular season. I really think that they can, especially if they get something for Ben Simmons, something of value, that team can definitely beat the Bulls in a best of seven. And I can't, you know, I'm a Bulls fan, but I really believe that.
Two of the hottest teams in the Eastern Conference, Bulls 9-1 in their past 10, Sixers 8-2. So it'd be an exciting matchup for sure. It's super interesting, though. We're talking about the Bulls. They're at top of the East, and you just said that three of those four teams that are top contenders, top competitors to the Bulls, you would pick the other team in the Heat, the Bucks, and the Sixers. So I don't know. I'm well, I wish you had a little more confidence in your Bulls, but, you know.
No, I'll say Bulls in seven over Philly, but it's like you said, a coin flip. Coin flip.
Like, yeah, and you might be right. I mean, with how are we going to stop DeMar and Zach, not to mention the renegade of guards that you have coming off the bench, you know, it would be a great series for sure.
I'm excited to see what happens and how the season plays out. Tomorrow night, again, Bulls and Nets on ESPN. It's going to be a great, great litmus test for the Chicago Bulls. If Kyrie and Harden play, because if they don't, it's going to be a letdown of an ESPN national television game. Watching Kevin Durant, De'Ron Sharp, and Cam Thomas won't be that fun. But Yos, as always, it's been
Cam Thomas had a game winner the other night.
He did. That San Antonio team is missing. Again, the Nets, I mean, that San Antonio team was very depleted, and the Nets almost choked that game, which would have been, I believe, their sixth straight home loss. They've been struggling. We'll see what happens, though, tomorrow. Yos, as always, it's been a pleasure to have you on the pod. The next time we're doing this, it's going to be the three of us again. But obviously, Harrison Liao, if you've gotten to this point, obviously Harrison is in love now, so we let him we let him go and be free. Yos, thank you again for joining us. Until next time,
thank you, Buckets.
We are out of here.